From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. Red Cloud School's records are kept at the archives of the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions. The Bureau oversaw Catholic Indian boarding schools in the U.S. and lobbied the federal government for funding to set up and run the schools. Its archive is at Marquette University in Milwaukee, a place where Mary Annette Pember from ICT has spent a lot of time trying to unearth old documents.
Several years ago, I got a tour of the collection from longtime archivist Mark Thiel.
Well, I've been here over 35 years.
Mark was welcoming but cautious, protective of his archival domain.
Oh my gosh, it's freezing in here. What temperatures are things kept at?
This is like 60 degrees.
It feels like
the study area of the archives is austere in that uniquely institutional manner I recall from my years at Catholic school. There's little ornament. The furnishings are wooden, heavy with an air of quality.
That was the correspondence there.
Okay.
That comes up from 1862.
Mark gave me a lot of his time, and while there was a lot of stuff I was allowed to see, there were a lot of documents I couldn't look at. The access seemed random, discretionary.
And it seems to me that it seems like, you know, transparency at this juncture, I mean, it can't hurt. Could it really hurt? Or
we don't have any records that are closed for any reasons of protecting the Catholic Church. There are records that are closed for reasons of personal privacy, and it would apply to all people equally for whenever those situations come up.
The privacy claim has been a big obstacle for the truth and healing process. There's a lot of truth buried in these boxes, but many documents are redacted, with big black marker strokes covering important information. Other documents are just off limits to the public. If we had access to the quarterly reports sent by schools to the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions, we could get a good idea of how many children attended these schools. Nobody knows the actual number. We could also cross-reference names with death records and try to figure out who might still be buried at the school without a grave marker.
There's 39 boxes of original copies, and then there are also several boxes of, redacted copies.
I wanted to see everything, including the redacted stuff, so I asked the head of the university archives, Amy Cooper Carey, about the access issues. Amy told me it's up to the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions to decide what they let the public see.
Could one look at the agreement that between Marquette and the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions?
No. We don't make those agreements publicly accessible. Those are internal documents. You said, what is our policy on access? Our policy on access is that we try to have open access to as much material as possible.
I would love to talk to the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions about oversight about the openness of the records.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could facilitate that, or just say that.
Well,
I don't know
if I can. I'll see.
Okay.
I'm not sure that. Yeah, I don't know. I can ask about it.
Okay.
But I've never had a researcher say, I want to talk to your donor about access to records. That's not usual.
Huh. Yeah. Well, wow, so I'm doing something new. That's exciting.
Yeah. it's not common.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this is educational for me.
There's legislation making its way through Congress right now that would help people get access to the records at Marquette and other institutions. It's called the Indian Boarding School Truth and Healing Commission Bill. Deb Parker from the Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition spoke about it at a committee meeting in 2022.
We must be able to locate church and government records beyond the Department of Interior's reach. The commission would have the power to issue subpoenas to produce records.
The church and the Catholic schools are private organizations, so unlike the National Archives, which also hold some records, they don't have to share what they don't want to. The bill would give the government subpoena power to open up some of the records. I went back to the Marquette Archives again in May of 2022, this time to see what I could learn about Red Cloud School.
Hi, I have an appointment for the Bureau of Catholic Indian Mission Records at the Reno Archives.
Your name, ma'am?
Mary Pember.
I'm shown to a quiet study room in the archives and start poring over boxes of dusty old documents on the verge of flaking apart. Some of this stuff is more than a century old. I come across a document that dates back to 1888. The cover sheet reads, "These notes on Holy Rosary Mission were translated from the diary of the Sisters of St. Francis who have been in charge since the very foundation." Holy Rosary Mission was the original name of Red Cloud School. The nuns' names are not listed. It was originally written in German. Their words, however, say a lot about how the nuns viewed Native people. We asked one of our colleagues to read some excerpts.
"All the children the first year were heathens. 60 received baptisms, and 30 made their first Holy Communion."
The nuns write about their arrival in Lakota country and how Native folks, first seeing them dressed in long black habits, asked if they were the priest's wives. There's heartbreaking stuff here, too, about the flu, tuberculosis, and other diseases that were spreading throughout the Lakota community on Pine Ridge.
"The Indians were left mostly for themselves. In one tent, after 4 days, it was found that the entire family was dead. In one, just a baby remained. Among the Indians, there were many deaths. Medicine, treatment, food, etc., was all missing for them. We had funerals every day in our cemetery, even as high as 4 in one day."
Then I find a chilling firsthand account of an especially tragic chapter in America's history with Native peoples. By the late 1800s, American Indians were losing their hold on their ancestral lands and way of life. People in the plains were starving because the buffalo had been killed off. European diseases were tearing through tribal communities, and the U.S. Army was winning the so-called Indian Wars. A movement took hold in many parts of Indian country called the Ghost Dance. The Ghost Dance was based on a prophecy that better days would come for Native people, that the earth would be restored, and that they would live in peace. The dance was intense and mesmerizing. The nun's diary talks about going to see the Lakota Ghost Dance a few miles away from the school.
"When we arrived, 500 were ready to start the dance. At a sign from the head chief, they started to howl. They started to dance, slowly at first, then faster, until they were unconscious."
The nun describes the ghost dancers as wearing clothes painted with pictures of scary animals. She wrote that they wanted the Great Spirit to turn the white man into buffalo and codfish so that they'd have something to hunt. White Americans felt threatened by the ghost dance. It was a peaceful movement, but the U.S. government treated it like an uprising that had to be put down. On a December day in 1890, a group of Lakota gathered not far from Holy Rosary Mission at a place called Wounded Knee. The U.S. cavalry surrounded them, then started shooting. Reading this firsthand report is gut-wrenching.
"And in their superstitions, they imagined nothing could possibly harm them. But in their first bloody meet with the government troops, it proved to them that they had a false impression."
Wounded Knee was a massacre, one of the final chapters of America's Indian Wars. Hundreds of men, women, and children were killed on that barren hill. All this practically on the doorstep of the school.
"As 40 acres of the land where the battle was fought belongs to Holy Rosary, the cemetery where the original warriors are buried still remain next to the church."
Even though I wasn't given access to the school's quarterly reports to the Bureau of Catholic Indian Missions, I found details about the school's budget in correspondence between priests and church authorities. There was also information on school funding embedded in the nuns' diary, like how much money Holy Rosary got, largely from Indian trust and treaty funds to run the school. The sisters wrote that they got $108 per kid from these funds starting in 1903. There were 188 kids at the school in 1903 and 200 the next year. Enrollment grew in the following years. We ran the numbers to try to calculate how much money that would add up to in today's dollars. When you adjust for inflation, it's almost $18 million paid from 1903 to 1940 out of funds given to the Lakota tribe through treaties with the U.S. government. So the tribe was actually paying for their children's forced education out of their own pockets. It worked like this across the country, and in many places, mission schools drew on tribal funds until they ran out. I also saw records at the Marquette Archive about the land the boarding school was built on. Not long after the school was founded, the federal government began handing over tribal land to Holy Rosary Mission, ultimately giving it more than 700 acres. Across the country, Catholic-run schools received more than 10,000 acres carved out of native lands. There's one more thing I learned from the archives about the most sensitive issue for people at Pine Ridge, kids who may have died at Red Cloud when it was a boarding school. I found references to 20 students who died there. Only 10 of them were named. Clara Yellow Bear, Zora Iron Teeth, Clara Candelario, Ellen Shangro, Sophia Bush, Rosa Red Elk, Ignace Blackface, Louisa White, Harley Cook, Lawrence Clifford. In most cases, the records don't say anything about how they died or where they're buried. But there's one child's grave I think we might actually be able to locate. Zora Iron Teeth. She died in 1915, and her name is the only one that appears on a map of the school's cemetery. So I decide to go back to the Red Cloud Cemetery to see if I can find her. Boy, the sun is already getting high in the sky. The cemetery is on a hill, a short walk from the school buildings. Walking through the gate, this place has a celestial feel. I wander past weathered grave markers. It's just how it is on the map. I'm looking for Zora, who died when she was 7 years old. I think maybe over the years it might have worn away. I think frequently they marked people's graves with wooden crosses or something of that nature, so it might be gone. But we will take a look. It's the nun's diary calls her Zona with an N, and the death certificate says Zora with an R, so I'm not sure which one it is. But I don't find either one, even though I'm clearly in the right spot according to the map. Well, I'm thinking little Zora or Zona's marker may have been gone. There's many places, gravesites, it looks like there were markers at one time, but they seem to have worn away. So 1915, that's more than 100 years ago. And if it was marked with wood, it does seem likely that it would be gone. So it appears there's at least one child here in an unmarked grave that we have some proof of. There's a chance school officials don't even know about her.
After a short break, Marionette returns to Red Cloud with what she's learned.
Where does the buck stop here at Red Cloud?
The buck stops with the board of directors and the president. That's where the buck stops.
You're listening to Reveal.